So this is Catherine Wall, and I am co-director of public history at the Marion Cheek Jackson Center. It is November 3rd, 2021, and we are at St. Joseph CME Church in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
And this is Anna Spencer. I'm also the co-director of public history at the Jackson Center.
And I am Patricia Jackson. I am a native of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I am here with these two lovely ladies at the H.W. Baldwin Fellowship Hall at St. Joseph CME Church, 510 West Rosemary Street, sharing the most proud history that I have in my life here today.
Wonderful.
What I brought today to share with these historians is a clip from the Daily Tar Heel from March 21st, 1988. And I share that clip because the staff writer byline there is of my daughter, Sonia Jackson Bruton, a graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She started her journalism degree there and now serves as the chief executive officer for carrying her PhD for Montgomery County, Silver Springs, Maryland. And I found this article, and this is one of her earliest articles, as she has in her career many, many articles of fantastic journalism, you know, all starting right here at Chapel Hill. And I was so proud to share that article with the archivist today.
When did she decide she wanted to go into journalism?
She's always picking up from her grandmother, Marion Cheek Jackson, always capturing information, always wanting to make sure that the voice of others were being heard, instantly being accepted at UNC. There, you know, she didn't think of any other profession except being, you know, that of journalism. Working in the church as a early child during the children's sermons, again, sharing information via the word of the Lord, making sure others always know there is a way and it's already ingrained, or the path is already set for you to follow. The choice of being a journalist, again, always wanting her voice and others' stories to be told throughout, and again by the person themselves or the people that know of the event and the things that are going on firsthand. I also brought along the Dr. Bruton is also a graduate of my alma mater, Chapel Hill High School, here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I brought along today a copy of the Proconian that was our newspaper from Chapel Hill High School. And it's from February the 27th, 1970. And the reason that I wanted to share this newspaper is even in 1970, as we were under the leadership of Mayor Lee, Mayor Howard Lee, that was the mayor at this time here in Chapel Hill, who got his inauguration right here in the sanctuary of St. Joseph CME Church here in Chapel Hill. Even in 1970, at a meeting on February the 19th, Mayor Lee was describing the mayor's youth council. Again, always incorporating the youth and things that were going on here in Chapel Hill. And it was so important to be in this community, sharing in the life of Chapel Hill under the leadership of a Black mayor, and then to have that mayor include young people in the goings on, as we called them at that time, of your town. You know, how exciting is that? And at that time also, we were continuing to have memories of the Lincoln High School, which was the only Black high school here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, you know, still being the effects still being felt, you know, in the hearts of all the people that had went to that high school, myself included, in the seventh grade. And after that year, that was 68, 69, after that year, then that high school being dissolved and no more a single high school for just one group of people, and of course being incorporated with Blacks and whites here in Chapel Hill. Also in this same article, you'll see several students that are represented, and the one being Donnie Tuck was a sophomore at that time in 1970, and you'll be proud to know that he, through his growth and youth here in Chapel Hill, he grew up to be now the mayor of Newport News, Virginia. And wanted to share that article as well.
So when you were growing up, you know, in younger grades, the older kids were all going to Lincoln from your community.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you think you would be going to Lincoln when you were approaching high school? And
well, yeah, that was the only place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, the students, the high school students that were at Lincoln were fierce, proud, all excited, and a force in our community. So yes, mm-hmm. you know, the expectation was I'd be right there, you know, one day following in their footsteps, making sure that the, legacy of, that great high school, you know, was felt even, you know, after I had laid my footsteps there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask how you and your classmates, you know, people around your age who were like almost high school age when, you know, the switch happened and Lincoln closed and you were all going to go to Chapel Hill instead. How did you all, do you remember how you all felt about that at the time?
We, there had been a lot of ruckus and a lot of commotion, you know, going on, you know, during these, you know, changing times. But the feeling that my class had was, okay, we're going to go, but we have everything we need to be successful. That's what had been instilled in us from grade school to where we were now. So under no circumstances were we going to be pushed around by anyone. Under no circumstances was our voice not going to be heard. Under no circumstances are we not going to be treated equal. And the thing that was most comforting was we had had the opportunity to be in a full community with everything that we needed. We had our church, we had our school, we had our grocery stores, we had all of the things that would make us feel safe and complete. So with those feelings, we were able, and then we had had collaboration with the other white churches in the neighborhood. Our ministers that had been in the church had had students to come from Duke University over to our church as youth workers. So we already knew that people like us could go further in our education if we put our mind to it. So being able, we had students also came from the Presbyterian Church as youth workers to come and make affiliation with our church. So again, still, we may worship, black and whites may worship at different churches, but they still believe in the one same God. Mm-hmm. Comforting, feeling safe, mm-hmm. being able to take that feeling and now have to go into a brand new arena was something that we had to do, but we felt safe being able to do it.
Now, this is just a minor question, just to answer a curiosity of mine. The I know that Lincoln's mascot was the Tigers, and I know that Chapel Hill High School's mascot now is the Tigers, but was that always the case?
Coming from Lincoln, going to Chapel Hill High School, again, making sure our voice was heard, making sure our legacy was carried on, how could to have to be the leading force in the community and in the state, and when you had to change over with the statistics, and again, remember, you're working with people that are, we know they're racist, we know they're systemic racism, but how can you challenge what the statistics show within the state as far as winning and where they were, you know, in that arena of education, I mean, of sports, mm-hmm. pretty much. So it was, for us, it was a no-brainer. How can you not, you know, carry the mascot to, you know, where it should be, mm-hmm. you know, for all? Mm-hmm. If you're wanting to be inclusive.
Do you know what Chapel Hill's mascot was before?
No, I don't. I'll have to, I don't. My cousin, Herman Morrell Fashi, was a high school student. And I would have to ask him what that mascot was prior, mm-hmm. when it was on Franklin Street, because mm-hmm. he would certainly no, as he was a high school student there. One of the other things I brought to share was in the Chapel Hill News on May 21st, 2000, is an article of 75 years of Hill life. And it talks about 1957, 1962, and I'm featured myself, Pat Jackson, in the class of 1971. A Chapel Hill High School 75th yearbook includes included, you know, my photo of I think the caption reads, Chapel Hill High School's 75th yearbook includes an ambitious look at the school's history from its beginning of Chapel Hill Grade School on Merritt Mill Road. And that's exciting for me as I have made my way back to Merritt Mill Road after a long time. So we'll include that. Article as well.
So they're coming up on 100 years as well, if 2000 was the 75th year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, they are.
And what year did you graduate from high school?
1971.
71.
Mm-hmm. I also brought an article that I wanted to share with from 2005. And it talks about homegrown businesses in the Midway Business Center. The Midway Business Center was the original place that here on Rosemary Street was our financial district. It was all the, you know, places that all the businesses were black owned. And then when Pastor Harrison and Mrs. Harrison came to St. Joseph, and in 2005, she started a business in that same business, Midway Business Center, and we were so proud and excited to be a part of our First Lady at that time having a business there in our historic business center.
What was the business that she started?
A floral business. Mm-hmm. As she had that a floral shop in her early life, her and her mother, when she was in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about when the Harrisons came to St. Joseph?
They came 2
Sure. Let's go ahead and resume. So we were just about to talk about the Harrisons and when they came to St. Joseph's.
The Harrisons came to St. Joseph in July of 2001. And the Harrisons came with Pastor Harrison, Mrs. Harrison, who I just shared that during her time here at St. Joseph with us, later started her floral business in 2005. They came with a family of boys and girls, so instantly they could feel all the boxes that comes with the pastor. There's Sunday school, there's church, comes with church, a choir, and having full fellowship. All the Harrisons were very, very talented. Pastor Harrison himself was an excellent speaker. Mrs. Harrison was a warm, outgoing person. And boy, could she sing. Really, really sing. So Pastor Harrison would preach, and she'd bellow out the beautiful music. And then the children, though young, they bellowed and carried right in her footsteps. I have an article to share here as well. After the Jackson Center got started in 2015, there's an article, "We're Making Art." And the narrator of that article is Brenton Harrison. And at that time, he was sharing his poetry and his Black Lives Matter and all sorts of exciting, making sure that his voice was being heard in school as he went to school here in the Chapel Hill school system and our community. And I'll share that article. It may be in the archives as well, but just sharing. But the Harrisons, Pastor Harrison brought community to our church, getting us to realize that, yes, God was in the church, but his work should be felt outside the walls of the church. It should be felt in the community. When people came to the church, they should be able to feel the love of God, and their needs should be met. If they're hungry, they should be fed. If they needed clothing, they should be given clothing. So thus, from the time that he was here with us from 2001 until 2010, actually, we started a food ministry that's going on today. We had a clothing ministry that's not active right now, but our different ministries within our church still continue to contribute to a lot of our agencies around Chapel Hill and Carrboro that collect clothing. But one of the other ministries that was started that is not active right now and largely because of COVID is that of the just had a brain block, but sharing ministry with others where we traveled from North Carolina to South Carolina to share in other churches when they were having trouble meeting their financial obligation. We would, Pastor Harrison would take the full church to the church and we would have church service. And of course, we brought financial contributions to smaller churches and the Word of God through fellowship as well. And one of the things that he started locally here was Frangelism in the Park. And that was a gathering of several musical groups for the community, an outside event that people could come and they would receive free clothing, food, but mostly the Word of God through song and fellowship. And that event was held every year, September the 11th. Frangelism in the Park. Again, friends and neighbors sharing with one another in a open and collective service, not confined to one denomination, one congregation, or the other, all fellowshipping together. And again, during his tenure and having the opportunity to help us understand that, again, the Word of God should not only be felt inside, it should be felt outside the walls of the church, we quote him as saying, where people's needs could be met, not having any barriers that separate us.
You mentioned his wife and her role as First Lady in the church, and I wonder if you could tell me a little bit more about what the First Lady in the church, what her role is, and then what, you know, what makes someone good at that, and how did she fill that role?
The typical role of the of a First Lady in the church is to be supportive and be in partnership with the minister. And I laugh because Mrs. Harrison was certainly a support to the minister, her husband, Reverend Harrison, but she was not a typical First Lady. When she saw a need of anyone, she took care of that need. She, again, I shared that she came with the full family, and a full family to her was not only herself, her husband, and her five children, but she came also with her mother, her sister, her nephews, and a full extended family. So with that, the provisions that were set for a family coming into a church, a husband and a wife, the churches in the CME church, there is housing that is provided, and that's what we call our parsonage. Well, for a full family, if you don't have a five-bedroom home, then the provisions that you've provided are not those that are full accommodating. Do you think that she let something like that stop or bother her? No way. Anytime that there was a need for her family that wasn't able to be met at the parsonage, she had a full church that she could use. So again, if she had needs that could not be met in a parsonage, it was not strange for you to see her here in our church fellowship hall taking care of using facilities for her family that she needed, maybe needed a bigger kitchen for, here cooking at the church, and would certainly open the door to anyone that needed a meal at any time. And again, typically, that would not be the role of a First Lady. But again, she was our First Lady, but also not only to our church, but to our community as well. Taking care of our community as she did her own family. And you know, meeting the needs. Our food ministry that started under their leadership was mostly started by her. Again, knowing people in the community needed food. She instantly found connections in Raleigh of a bread maker that was needing to get rid of bread that he wasn't able to sell that was a day old, but she took that bread, brought it back, made distributions to anybody that needed, you know, bread. And at the same time, being an excellent cook herself, taking those treasures and making the best bread pudding ever, you know, all around. Also the role of, you know, again, the first lady of a church would be, again, the primary role is to support your husband, but there was a vacancy, a void in our music ministry. She stepped right in, brought the children, joined the choir, and now we had three choirs. Not only a youth, but, you know, small group choirs where if the pastor was going somewhere and a choir couldn't go from the church, instant choir of the family and community members feeling the need of, you know, what's needed in the community to support her husband, but, and again, you know, taking care of what needs to be taken care of. Just a, her, again, making sure her family was the extended family. We had a minister, a first lady, full family, our first grandmother, first mother-in-law. Again, all community, all supported, you know, of the congregation and the community here at St. Joseph.
Did that spirit of thinking outside the church walls and really connecting with people throughout the community, did that kind of take fire through the rest of the congregation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it did. The people felt the community back and the fellowship back around the church, because prior to coming here, a lot of it was activity at the church, but not as active as it was in our history back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And what I equate or wanted to have that side by side with 60s, everything happened around the church. You came to the church for rallying. You came for worshiping, you came for social, you came for Sunday school, church service, 7 o'clock service. You came annually, revival. You came back for all sorts of special event days. Everything was centered around, you know, the church. So now in 2001, we're doing everything again. All we're doing this, we're continuing to get the word. We're continuing for Sunday school. We're back now to full evangelism in the park. going to other places, food ministry. And not only now, we're not only just taking food sporadically, we have a full food ministry Monday through Friday where people can come in, and we've set up provisions to get a van to go pick up the food, bring it here, sort it, where people can come and choose their self. Revivals, programs, Friday Night Lights for youth to come and share their talent. Brenton being a person of, you know, the spoken word, again, youth, you know, all around. Remember, there's five kids, so now they're in our school, so their friends are coming. Mm-hmm. So lots of things are, you know, happening as we were used to prior. I mean, you know, when we were in the 60s through, you know, the 2000s of, you know, things happening, things going on. Mm-hmm. So I would say yes, it was felt, you know, throughout the congregation and community. Because even, and in the, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s, one, there were, in this block, there are three churches just around the corner. And when, as a child, I went from First Baptist to Vacation Bible School 1 week, St. Joseph Vacation Bible School the next week. All this is in the summer. Mm-hmm. The third week, St. Paul's Vacation Bible School. So we didn't have to, my mother never had to worry about doing what we were doing for the summer. Mm-hmm. Because every week we were at a structured Vacation Bible School, and that was your summer. 3 weeks, and then you had received points all year for how many times you went to Sunday school. That determined whether you went to the end of the year trip, you had to pay or not. If you had so many Sunday school attendance, then you went free.
Wow.
So the fourth week was the picnic. So your summer was taken care of. Then after that, it was back to school.
What were some of the places you'd go on the trips?
Oh, we went to Atlanta. We went to King's Dominion. We went to, 1 year, we went to Slick Six Flags over Georgia. And these were, you get to go out of town. Hmm. You didn't go out of town unless you were in the sixth grade taking a trip to Washington, D.C. was your sixth grade trip. Mm-hmm. At school. But those were big, yeah, big incentives. Mm-hmm. And big rewards.
And did the same kids all go to, I mean, when you were at the different churches, Vacation Bible School, did you see the same kids who were from all three congregations all 3 weeks?
Oh, yeah, same kids, same group of, you know, people in your neighborhood. Yeah, we followed each other all around.
Looking at it from the perspective of an adult involved in the church, do you think that the adults, when you were a kid planning Vacation Bible School, do you think they connected to make sure they weren't doing exactly the same stuff 3 weeks in a row?
No, they just, it just happened. I would say it just happened, but they probably did. They probably did collaborate, because these were the same, these adults, you know, were the same people that grew up in this neighborhood and, you know, were affiliated with each other and, you know, knew you know, each other, you know, all around. So I'm sure some collaboration went on, because as an adult working in the church now, we collaborate with our neighboring, you know, churches all around. So I'm sure some collaboration may have gone on.
So you didn't get the same verse 3 weeks in a row? Or...
if we did, we didn't pay attention to it. Yeah, we didn't pay attention to it. But you just felt more empowered, because even if you did remember something and you were able to bring it back up now, that was a point for you. Right. So that's a good thing.
You impressed the teacher.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody maybe thought you were listening. Yeah. But...
it sounds like they made a big impact very quickly in the feeling of the church.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. Yeah. We partnered with Shaw University back in 2008, and that was a collaboration of over 25 churches throughout North Carolina looking at health disparities in the, you know, Black community. And again, you know, Pastor Harrison always connecting and collaborating and, you know, making sure that people were healthy, not only spiritually, but in their physical body as well.
So you mentioned the Midway Business District and Mrs. Harrison's shop there. When you were growing up, what are some of the businesses you remember being in that part of town?
Oh, there was a barbershop. There was a the early existence of Bill's Barbecue. What is today in 2021, Mama Dip's Kitchen. A salon, well, I said barbershop, but there was also a hair salon. There was a Quick Pick, a little corner store. There's a laundromat. There was a dance or I don't know if it was, well, it was, I do know what it was. It was the club. Yeah, it was a small, a little area that was in between, like a little small club for adults. What else was there? Funeral home was there, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was yeah, it was a store. Yeah, I said Quick Pick. Yeah, it was a like a little store there as well. Mm-hmm. But all the you know, all the things that you would, all the things you needed. I lived on what's now Sunset Drive. At that time, it was named Nunn Street. And my neighborhood was, I could walk from my house at Nunn Street over to Hargraves, which was on Robertson Street. It was a straight shot. And then I could go from Hargraves, Robertson Street, all the way up to the corner. And the Midway was on the other side of Rosemary. Mm-hmm. came to church here, but before I was coming to church here, I was going to church at First Baptist because that's where all my friends were. So I could go across the street there and then come back here, go to the store there, and then, you know, come, had to get back on this side, go back home, and my whole, like, path area. So everything we needed was right in our neighborhood.
When you were going to First Baptist, was your family going there as well or coming to St. Joseph?
No, my family didn't come to St. Joseph. My family, my mother, our home church is Neville's Chapel, mm-hmm. and it's out on 15501 headed towards Greensboro. Mm-hmm. That's where my family church was. Mm-hmm. But again, that was the country mm-hmm. at that time. And after we moved from the country, from our home place, we moved to Nunn Street. So this was uptown. So my friends now are uptown. So I'm not going to the country, mm-hmm. but I got to go to church. Mm-hmm. So my friends are going to church here and here. So, you know, you went to church.
And your parents were fine as long as you were
in
church.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My mother was fine. Just, you going to church. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you don't go to church with me, but you going to church.
Mm-hmm. Is there a big, a big denominational difference or a big teachings difference between the Baptist Church and the CME Church?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Not really. Just procedural mm-hmm. differences. But I would say no, not a big difference in teaching the Word of God.
In terms of beliefs,
yeah.
Very similar.
Very similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What made you decide to start coming to St. Joseph's? Like, when did that happen for you?
That happened in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where I met my husband, my now husband, was here. We had basically been coming back and forth, you know, our friends, and a couple of them were over at St. Paul, but mostly First Baptist and here. And I guess it was in the 60s, back in 64, when Reverend Chambers had the Duke students, and they were doing, they had a pool table over here. They were going to lots of gatherings at in Durham, you know, lots of things going on, and we were hanging out here more and more at St. Joseph, and it was a I guess for the ratio of young boys, it was more younger boys over here that was doing a whole lot of things. Mm-hmm. And of course that caught the eye of the girls over there, and wasn't that many sharp looking boys over there. So you just gravitate to where they are, and you start, you know, getting involved in, things that are going on, you know, over here. And you end up where the action is, pretty much. And, you know, where things are, you know, the things that, you know, kids are interested in and, you know, wanting to be involved in, and that's all relational. Mm-hmm. You know, people that you want to be around and things that want, you know, you want to happen.
And you've been at St. Joseph's ever since?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So the youth programming is huge in terms of, because, you know, you've been serving this church now for 40 some odd years,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So that youth programming is what builds the foundation.
It's what builds the foundation. You're exactly right. And there's a, what do we say and what do we, how do we relate to it? The youth are our future. And that's true. Because if you have a strong program that engages children, the youth, the foundation is built, and that's where you get your relationship and your loyalty. And, you know, that's all, as a young person, that's all you have until you're old enough to be able to see that interpersonal and that one-on-one relationship with the Lord, you standing on somebody else's. And that's the foundation and the word of others until you can feel it and see it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. But if you can bring them in for the pool table and the good-looking boys.
Yep. Yeah, then you got them. Definitely.
It gives them time.
It gives them time. Yeah, yeah. And it's so important, you know, because I think I shared and allude to it, you know, always. It's the safety of being able to be in an environment, to be nurtured, mm-hmm. to receive. But if you're somewhere where you're not safe, you're not going to get anything, mm-hmm. because you can't. Too many factors, you know, all around, and you can't learn anything about yourself or, you know, anything else.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to open your heart to something if you're very defended.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's a great point.
How are you doing on the scan?
Finishing up now. This one took a while, getting like the six scans of each page to piece together.
All right. What else have you brought for us today?
I think that's it that I've brought for you today.
All right. Yeah.
What's this? Oh, that's just the. Oh, that's just Northside Initiative.
Well, if this feels like a good place to pause for now, we can set up a time to come back and do some more, if that feels good for you.
It feels good to me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anything you want to add before I turn the reporter off?
No, I'm good.
All right.
Can't wait for the next time.